This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place. This season, we're going deep on Time Out of Mind to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Here's your host, Craig Danieloff.
Michael Hacker is a Dylan fan. In some ways, he's a pretty typical hardcore fan. He's been into Dylan for a long time and he's seen a ton of shows. Plus, he's a smart, thoughtful guy who has clearly put in the hours thinking about what this guy's work really means. In the episodes so far, and some more that are still to come, I've asked authors and professors and musicians what they thought about Dylan in the years before Time Out of Mind and how the album first hit them. Well, I wanted to ask a more traditional fan those same questions. I knew Michael would have an interesting story and opinions worth hearing because he has his own podcast called A Bob Dylan Primer. The bulk of it is a 15-episode look at Dylan's entire career, something Michael did to help new fans who wanted to try and put Bob's huge career into perspective. I started listening not long after he started, and despite not being a newbie, I really found it compelling. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's a great recommendation to have for any friends who are just getting serious about Dylan, or it's something anyone, even a lifelong fan, can listen to and enjoy. Michael finished the series, but then came back a while later with a particularly interesting episode about his own journey with Dylan, which I had heard just before this project began earlier this year. If you like what you hear today, I would certainly go grab the episode of A Bob Dylan Primer called Nothing But Affection. I had met Michael briefly in 2019 when he traveled from Los Angeles to New York because he didn't want to miss the November Beacon run of shows that year. So I rang him up and he offered to talk. Here's my conversation with Michael Hacker.
If you don't mind, why don't you start with briefly where you picked up Bob Dylan and then maybe jump ahead. You've seen amazing shows. And if I, on a normal podcast, I would just want to interview all those experiences at some of the most pivotal shows in Dylan's career. But let's hear maybe how it started and then jump forward to 78.
So I think the thing you're touching on is this idea of what the perception is of Dylan out in the world, but also from his fans or people that follow him. And you know, when I sort of kid about being a recent Dylan fan, although to me it feels like I was late to the game, because when I got into Dylan, let's say in 71, and I was a pretty little kid. I was like in junior high school. And, you know, the feeling was, I didn't know much about music or whatever, but, or pop, you know, what was really happening. But the sense was, this was an old guy. This was past. This was from the 60s, which at that time, somehow time went so fast so that in 72, 73, the 60s seemed a long ways away already, right? So here was, you know, this kind of, Dylan seemed like an icon from the past. Like you would look at, you know, Frida Kahlo or, you know, I don't know, somebody like that. He seemed like he belonged there. And so Blood on the Tracks, and it seemed like this kind of amazing, document. Like a, not a last gasp, but like sort of the brilliance of Dylan from his early years. He pulled it together to make that record, and Desire and Street Legal, which all those records I loved, but they just didn't seem like cutting edge or that important to what was happening. And again, as I talk about in the podcast, you know, punk rock was happening, new wave was happening, there were all these bands, Talking Heads, and, you know, Patti Smith, and, you know, the Ramones and the Clash, Tom Petty, Elvis Costello. It was hard to stack those artists against Street Legal, right? I mean, if you were like, which of these are the cool kids listening to, it was going to be those other acts, right? And so it's not a knock on Dylan. It was just like he was kind of operating in his own universe. And so I think in the 80s, I did go to see the religious shows, but here's an example. I was in LA. I was a huge music fan. I was seeing shows all the time. I was going out, I don't know, three or four times a week. I had friends who were, you know, really into music. And I I had two tickets, I think, to the show. I could not get anyone to go with me. And it wasn't like people were like hanging up the phone, but no one was interested to see the 79 shows at the Santa Monica Civic, right? And it wasn't that people were like, oh, I don't want to go because Dylan is now in a born again phase. There wasn't even that much of an awareness of, no one really knew what he was going to do with the shows. Kind of they knew, but not exactly. And so it was just, nah, who cares? You know? So, and I feel like that sense did continue through the 80s, where there was, you know, still some amazing stuff being done. Every record had some incredible songs on it. But I think the feeling was, yeah, I love Bob Dylan. Yeah, he's quirky and weird, and I listen to these records, but I'm not going to compare a Dylan record to the other, let's say, best music that was happening in any given year throughout the 80s.
One easy question is, did you find friends to go to the later shows after 79, or did they not come back until much later?
The Petty shows in 86, that was kind of a, you know, it was like a rock event, and it was kind of fun to go. And I remember those were bigger shows. I don't know. I saw a show in Orange County. I'm not sure if I guess he didn't play LA, but I saw him at Irvine and also I think San Diego on that tour. And
you went to the Petty shows, and then you saw him with the Grateful Dead.
I did. What, yeah.
You know, who was carrying who there, and what was the perception of Dylan then? That's 87, I guess.
I mean, it was a little bit of a mess, you know, hearing it and all that. You know, I do think in terms of records, the acoustic records, you know, Good As I've Been to You and World Gone Wrong, those are amazing records. And those actually did not, you know, those were incredibly satisfying and still are. I think they're pretty deep in a way, even though they're all covers. There's a lot going on there. I remember I was actually living outside of LA, and I was living in a pretty remote place, and like no one I know had those records. No one talked about them. No one, you know, they weren't on the radio. It was just like, you know, you were just in your room listening to that music kind of, and he wasn't touring in that way at that time. So,
you know, which brings us, as you say, really into the 90s, right? So you got Under the Red Sky, then those two, and then, you know, the period continues with Nothing New. We have 7 years between Under the Red Sky and Time Out of Mind, which sort of further sets this up as low expectations. It's been 7 years since anything. The last thing was Under the Red Sky. So I think you said you were living in Europe. Talk about that period right before Time Out of Mind.
So 1997, because I looked in my journal. So I was, you know, Dylan was the guy for me, even though everything I've just said. And I made a notation because I was buying bootlegs, you know, bootleg CDs in Europe and stuff. And I said, oh, I just spent, you know, $40 at the flea market today, got some great Dylan stuff. And so I was listening to a lot of, you know, old stuff, live shows, bootlegs, and that was pretty potent. It's always potent to listen to that stuff. And the announcement about Dylan's illness, you know, which is, you know, taboo for the Dylan people. We can't really think about Dylan's, you know, mortality, but that was scary. And I remember very well, you know, calling friends, and it was upsetting. It was just a really horrible thing to think about, that he was sick. And it seemed like he was pretty sick. You know, then there was this notice that the album was coming out, and you know, many, many people have commented that it's so weird that the album was recorded before the illness and so forth. But so the album came out, and I saw it came out the end, I guess, last week of September, and I bought it in Europe on the 6th. And please don't write in and hate me. But, you know, what I wrote in my journal was, you know, got the new Dylan record today. You know, I said, you know, not loving it yet, you know, or don't love it or something like that. And again, you know, that's to me the ongoing lesson about Dylan. And that's why this sort of perception thing is so relevant, interesting. It doesn't, you don't really have it with other artists, or I don't with other musical artists. You know, a song like Trying to Get to Heaven, I was just listening to the Bowie cover. I mean, that song didn't really land for me maybe till the last year or two, you know, and it's 20 years, you know, more than 20, 25 years away. So I love the record, and I listened to it. As I mentioned the podcast, I listened to it every night because I didn't have a lot of CDs, and it was kind of fun to just go listen to it before going to bed. So I have a very strong sense memory of where I was and listening to it and so forth. But it's not like I put it on and said, oh my God, this is Dylan's greatest, or this is fantastic. It was in some ways a difficult record to get into. Again, you know, the last things that I'd been listening to that he put out new was World Gone Wrong, which was a much more, in a way, accessible record. Now, looking back, you think, well, why would you have any trouble listening to Lovesick or stuff like that? But it didn't, you know, it wasn't comforting. It wasn't like putting on a coat, you know.
I think everything about it is different than everything both before and really after, both in terms of songwriting and sound. And so it's not that surprising to me that the distinction, it doesn't go down easy because there's no predecessor for it. It's interesting that that was your perception at the time. You remember the buildup.
This, you know, there's some fantastic songs, but they're not hooky. There's no pop hook in them. So it just takes time. I mean, Lovesick is an incredible song. It's just not a song that you necessarily just hear the first time and just, you know, be like, call your friends and you got to hear this. And Trying to Get to Heaven too. I mean, it's just a very heavy, heavy, heavy song. It just takes time to get into. And that's the thing about Time Out of Mind felt like one of those records, like, you know, like the Johnny Cash record with Rick Rubin, or, you know, or one of the later Leonard Cohen records, or, you know, like, here's this great artist. It's, you know, Return to Form isn't quite right, but it's sort of like the capstone, or the, you know, the summation of their career. And they showed that the old dog still has these new tricks. And it was like that, but it didn't seem like Dylan was going to keep turning out, you know, album after album of great stuff. And that, like, that December, I saw Dylan, you know, at these shows here, which were fantastic shows. And it was kind of like, wow, he's alive. He can still stand on stage. And those were really, really great. There's tapes of those December 97 shows. And, you know, I think it's a really important record career-wise for all those things. And musically, it's just another, to quote Pink Floyd, it's another brick in that wall. You know, it's just, I mean, there are riches in that record still to be discovered. And that's to me the coolest thing. I promised you I wanted to listen earlier, but I didn't this week. But I mean, as soon as we're done here, I'm going to go put on Time Out of Mind. And there's no doubt that something's going to be like, oh, wow. You know, there's just, I'm sort of salivating.
Getting, right.
You know, can't wait to listen to the record. So.
All right. Good. Well, this was a last minute request. Michael, I really appreciate you taking some time. I really suggest people go and hear your whole podcast series, but that last episode, I think, and I've seen the reaction you've gotten, a lot of people feel like it's a good description of being a Dylan fan from someone who's, maybe you didn't start at the beginning, but we'll give you credit for 40 years. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks for listening.
Last week, I was listening to a podcast from Michael Hacker. He's got a really nice podcast that the first section was kind of a walk through all of Dylan's albums called the Bob Dylan Primer. And Michael, in this latest episode, was reflecting on his journey with Bob for the last 40 years. And he told a really nice set of stories about this time period, what it was like to be a Dylan fan in the 80s and 90s. And so I asked him to talk about that and share that with us. He's on a plane right now on the way to Tulsa. I recorded that, and so I'm going to play it for you now.